Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're in for some drama today. Always some excitement. The amazing thing is that sometimes you read these books and they come up with these bizarre plots and you imagine that these stories never happen. And sometimes history is more exciting than a mystery or than fiction. Stranger than fiction, yeah, things happen. We had last week where the house of Ahav would be was basically wiped out by Yehu. We're in chapter 10 in Malachim. Today we're going to begin chapter 11. And it was predicted, and Hashem was very patient with that dynasty. It was a shame because that dynasty had a lot of potential. But ultimately it was the influence of the foreign women that, specifically Jezebel, that did him in. And here, one of the things we mentioned is that the influence of the Jewish woman, in Judaism, the women have always had a say in things, or a big share of things that happen. Because Judaism always values the women and doesn't their role in society, depending on there's an expression in Hebrew, "B'makom sheinu ish." If there's no man to step forward, so sometimes it's a woman who steps forward, or the best person for the job is the one that does it, and that works in a good way. And it could work if the woman is a righteous woman, and it could work in a bad way if the person is not a righteous woman. In last week's parsha. We have that after the splitting of the sea, we have that Miriam leads her own song with the women because they had a special role in the going out of Egypt. In fact, if it would have been just the men as a group, they would have been left in Egypt probably. The women kept the Jewish people going through very difficult times, and that's often been the case. And so therefore, they wanted to celebrate by themselves, really, knowing what the mothers and wives had gone through. Having their children thrown in the sea and having, you know, lived through that. So Miriam led a special song after the at the sea. Now the Haftorah also, there's no coincidence, also talks about famous women. The Haftorah would dealt with Devorah and Yael, which is just so it's just interesting that when we read it, we're not surprised by it. And the only reason I point it out is because every now and then you run into people that want to paint Judaism in the same way as other religions, like the Muslims or the Christians, where the women were second-class citizens, and they did need to change what they were doing. But we never had to change that, because Judaism doesn't suffer from they didn't value the women enough, and now they need to, and there needs to be changes made, and, you know, however, whatever the feminists want to say. Perhaps in those other religions it was true, but in Judaism we always the importance of a woman and the Torah says very clearly that women are equal to men, or and that there never was anyone who felt differently, you know. That so we're going to begin though with the a woman who was wicked, was bad, and of course everything will be saved because of another woman who's good. Right, so that's just interesting how that works out. Now, there are two reasons that the following happened. Why is it that the monarchy in Judah, in Yehuda, goes through such trouble? They were, for the most part, righteous kings. And the reason why they were in so much trouble was they wanted to make peace with the northern tribe, and they intermarried into the house of Ahav and Jezebel. And that was not the way to make peace. In other words, you want to get along with everybody, but if getting along means that you marry from the family of Jezebel, you'll see where it'll get you. And we're going to see right away where it'll get us. She's going to wipe out the whole house of David, basically. And that's because... So sometimes people make a mistake. Our challenge is we also live at a time where people want to do things for the sake of peace, which sounds good. But sometimes if you do something for the sake of peace and it's not the right thing... it could be deadly for others, and so that's a big challenge, to know when to give in or on what terms. They all assumed that if they would take it was a very harmless way of bringing the Jewish people together was to take a daughter-in-law from the house of Achav. So let's see what happened here. Ba'atayahu Aim Achazyahu. So it's very interesting. This was Achazyahu's mother. It wasn't even the wife of the king. It was the queen mother who's going to seize power. What happened was her son was killed by Yehu. Yehu was on the warpath, and her son, who was from that terrible house of Achav and Jezebel, just happened to be visiting when it came time for the punishment of the descendants of Achav. And actually, since he had intermarried into this, he was killed at that time by Yehu. So now the king was dead, and the monarchy normally should have gone to his children. But she being the queen mother, and she was from Jezebel, from that line, so she decided to seize power. Vesalyahu Ema Chazyahu. Ataliyahu, the mother of Achazyahu. Barasa, and she saw Kimeis Bana, that her son was dead. She saw that he passed away. They took him, and so what she decided to do was she then went and killed all the male offspring who might be in line to get the kingdom. And what would happen if there were no males to be sit on the throne? Then she would be able to grab the power. And that's what she did. Betabet is kozera hamamlacha. Now the only thing was, that meant basically she wiped out her grandchildren. That's who, for the most part. So she went and she wiped out every single living member of the royal household. And it looked like a moment. Now we have a tradition that the Mashiach was going to come from the royal household of the kings of David. So potentially, if she were to have been successful, then mankind would not have had that one person who would eventually lead us to success. You know, that'll eventually be that right, the right person that'll be the right leader that will bring everybody back. History would have lost the Mashiach. And one of the things that we've seen from, if you remember from King David, is we had a lot of close calls throughout history. The Mashiach often hangs by a thread. You know, just she wiped out all of the descendants of David. And the question how she did it. Anybody want to guess?
Poison,
yeah. How'd you guess? Okay.
She
poisoned him. You know, she was the grandma. Here, have my cake, you know, have my cookies. Grandmas are always feeding the grandchildren, and so she poisoned them, according to I saw in the Medrash that she poisoned them. Betikach Yehosheva Bas HaMelech. Now, most people say this was not her daughter. There were other wives, and there was a lady there named Yehosheva, and she saw what was going on. She was a daughter of Yoram, Achos Achazyahu, so she was Achazyahu's sister. And so she saw what was going on, and so she stole away one of the children of the household. That's Yoash ben Achazyahu. She stole Yoash away. V'tignav oso mitok b'nei hamelech, hamosin. In other words, all the sons of the king were being killed. That royal household was being wiped out. And she figured she would sneak out one of them. Maybe they wouldn't notice. Maybe they did notice. Maybe they didn't. And she would hide him. Now, this child, they probably would go looking for this child. And where would you hide him? So the house of the king, going back to David, was next to the temple. It was close to the temple, close proximity. If you remember, David HaMelech wanted that the king should serve Hashem. And B, he specifically made the palace next to the Beis HaMikdash. So she acted very quickly, and she went and she snuck him into the Beis HaMikdash. Now, many people say her husband was a Kohen. That was helpful. In other words, she knew where to go, and she had an ally in the Beis HaMikdash who would help her sneak him out. There probably wasn't much time to plan this. In other words, you know, the murders were going on, and it was probably a very difficult thing. It says like she stole him. It means like she snuck him out. You know, I don't know how she did it, but she snuck him out and she hid him in the Cheder Hamitos.
Was he little?
Yeah, it was an infant, a baby. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is Yoram and
same person.
Yeah, same person. So, Atayahu, and they had to hide him because if Atayahu, the queen, had known that there was another son, an heir to the kingdom, who was alive, well, she would have definitely killed him. So, Velohumus, and so she was unable to kill him. Now, what exactly is the Cheder Hamitos? So, the Rashi says that it was the Holy of Holies, because nobody would think to look in there. Now, it was the Holy of Holies is a place where no one was allowed to go, and only once a year on Yom Kippur, only one person went, the Kohen Gadol. And so that's a perfect spot to hide someone, because no one else would think of going in there. Most people say it wasn't actually, it was like above the Holy of Holies. They had Kohanim at all kinds of inner chambers, like, you know, places around there. Because he grew up in the Holy of Holies, he was a very special child, you know, had a unique upbringing being brought up in the Holy of Holies. And it worked on him in a good way, and we'll see also eventually it there was a negative to it also, but we have time till we get to that. But they hid him in the temple. Wouldn't it be strange, like if a person's in the Beis Hamikdash and they hear crying coming out of that? What did you hear from the art, you know, out of the Torah? Is that you know? It just, you know, the truth is, I don't know if the Levium were singing most of the time, and probably a lot of people. It's probably a noisy kind of place. The Beis Hamikdash, you had all the cows and the sheep and the goats, and you had people coming and going by the thousands, and you had the choirs, and so I guess you really wouldn't hear necessarily a baby crying, and even if you would, it would be Kohanim who would hear. And I don't know what to think. I don't know what you would decide, you know, why. But they hid him there. And
is it possible that some people knew what was going on and knew that?
That there had to be some Kohanim who were in on it. Definitely they would not have been in favor of this queen who was a murderer. That definitely was not according to Jewish law, that a person would be a murderer would be acceptable as a ruler. Verse 3, they hid him for 6 years. That's a long time. And it's very difficult to keep secrets from power, you know, royal powers. They have spies everywhere. They have people that want to ingratiate themselves, but they somehow managed to do it. That's how Yom Malach HaSalorot. And she was one of the first Jewish queens, I guess. She was a queen on the land. Verse 4, Ubashana Hashvis. Now, but they obviously felt that she was a wicked person. Most of the Mefarshim say that she was raised with idolatry. And so, again, idolaters just didn't have, to them, that was natural to just, you know, wipe out babies or whatever. Anybody who's a threat to them, this was part of their, you know, it wasn't strange for them to do something like that. But in the Jewish people, for that to happen was a shock. And the Kohanim, of course, would not be happy with that. So, it was in the seventh year, Shalach Yehoyada, who is a Kohen, he sent Vayikach Esori HaMeos. So he had a plan. He had a plan, which was to anoint the rightful king from the house of David, now that he was seven. I don't know why seven, I don't know what the significance, still quite a baby, maybe 7 years old was enough to, I don't know, communicate or whatever, or either that, or they could no longer hide him. You know, a baby you can keep in a pen, or you can keep in a playpen, or when they get too big where they can climb over, you can't, you know, it becomes difficult to keep it a secret. So in the seventh year, Shalach Yehoyada v'yikach Esori HaMeos, alakri l'ratzim, v'yavo samela beis Hashem. So he sent to the officers, and he brought, he had a meeting with the heads of going back to the times of Moshe, we always had judges and we had Kohanim, and he had a meeting with them, and he brought them to the house of Hashem, Bikus Lahem Bris, and he said, I got a secret, and he made a covenant, we got to do what's right over here. Now, to challenge a monarch is a very deadly kind of thing, especially a monarch that butchered babies. You imagine what she would do to these people over here. So he needed everybody to be on his side, so he made a covenant with them. In verse 4, Vishva, he made him swear, Viz Hashem, Vayar Osam es Ben HaMelech, and he said, I got to show you someone here. Now, it's very interesting, like, to be loyal to a new king, to risk your life for a new king, you kind of need to know that they exist. And so by showing them the new, you know, the child, that gave them the desire, that the willingness to risk everything to coronate this new king.
Doesn't this also imply that he must have known that in part of the 6 years that the child was there?
Oh, yeah, yeah, he knew it.
Yeah,
but
he
I,
had to have known.
Yeah, he had to have known.
I don't understand who Jehoiada is.
Who? Most people say that was his wife, of Jehoiada, the Kohen. She was a princess.
She was the wife of Jehu?
No, of Jehoiada. But she was a daughter of the king. Mm-hmm. She was a daughter of the king that had been killed.
She was the one who smuggled the child.
So this would have been her...
it was her grandmother.
This would have been her niece, her nephew.
Her nephew.
Her nephew. She would have saved her nephew.
And her husband was the Kohen.
The Kohen.
Yeah. Now, at least for
right. Some people feel he had to be the Kohen Gadol, and other people say it doesn't call him a Kohen Gadol. We just don't know. he was an important Kohen for sure. Now, we have a tradition also that he taught the son, the child. He was his Rebbe. He taught him, you know, taught him Aleph Beis and taught him, you know, imagine being raised there and not, you know, knowing what was going on and what was happening with your family. And it was probably a very difficult time. So, but he had a plan, and in order to do the plan, he came up with the following idea. Well, he knew that he would need lots of guards, so the Kohanim had a natural system there were Kohanim. One of their positions was to guard the house of Hashem. It's like an honor guard. Even when they take the Torah out, they always have a person standing on each side. And they had people by the door and by the gates and by that was just part of the system there, but the way the Beit HaMikdash was divided up is that all the family of the Kohanim had a shift, and every week there would be a different shift so that each family got their turn to work in the Beit HaMikdash. So in order to have extra Kohanim around, he arranged that before the old shift, when the new shift comes in, the old shift shouldn't leave. So you'd have a double shift. That's what he does over here. He said, the third of you will come on Shabbos. You watch, there was an entrance way from the house of the king. It was very important to make sure that the king's guards not come in. And the thirds would be by that gate. And the other gate would be near the runners. So they had to control the going and the coming. They had to make sure that no hostile assassin would come in. And they also had to make sure that nobody would give the news to the king. Verse 7. And the two-thirds that usually leave on Shabbos is Shabbos Mishmeres Beis Hashem El HaMelech. They would guard the pathway to the king. Ve'kaftem Al HaMelech. Some of them would be like, some of them would be private bodyguards that would stand around the new king, Saviv Ish Ve'kela Biyado. And you would be holding their weapons in your hand. Very interesting thing. David HaMelech, when he was king, had made it that they kept weapons near the Beit HaMikdash. And nobody knew exactly why he did that. And over here, basically, it ended up saving the Davidic line because he did that. Because they had these weapons nearby that were kept near the Beit HaMikdash. Anybody that comes near the king or wants to do it, they should kill them. You have to be tough over here. And you go with the king and don't let him out of your sight, this new king. Okay. So verse 9, the yes is sorry, Meos to call Asher Siva Yoyada Kohen. So all the officers did the plan, they went according to plan. Bika Isha Sanashaboy Bishabas Inyo, they had the incoming group and the outcoming group. Vyaba El Yo, and they came to Yoyada for orders. Verse 10. Bitana Kohen the Sar Meos at Sachanis. And he passed out the weapons. He gave him the shields, the Shalatim, Asher Lamelech David, Asher Ves Hashem. I wonder, you know, if you remember when, the time of Shlomo, they had those gold shields that were more like ceremonial. I wonder if they then used them. But they somehow had these weapons that were just there. maybe to protect in a time of danger. Nobody knew exactly when they would need something like that, but now was the time. We have to just pause for a second and ask ourselves a question. Why would it be that Hashem would allow all of the descendants of the house of David to be wiped out except for one? David Melech was a righteous person. So why would Hashem have allowed that? So we have a tradition from the Medrash that when David was running away from Shaul, he was on the most wanted list. And anyone who he would talk to, who would help him, would be suspect that they were against the king. So he stopped by the city of Kohanim to get food and to get arms. And what happened was the king, who was by nature very suspicious, became convinced that the Kohanim were in a plot to depose him. And so he wiped out the city of Nov, and only one person escaped. And because of the Medrash says that if that one person hadn't escaped, then David HaMelech wouldn't have had that one child that escaped. Because on some level, he should have been more cautious, that knowing the way Shaul was, that this was a dangerous move for him to get the Medrash is a very funny Medrash. It blamed Yonason. It said, why didn't Yonason give him food for the way? And then that would have solved all the problems. So ever since then, every Jewish mother, when you go on a trip, you take lots of food with you. You never know when you'll need it. No, don't worry. No. Because we learned our lesson. That was because Yonason didn't give David any food for the way, he had to stop off to get a bite to eat. And they almost wiped out the... So it's interesting. The person who was saved was a Kohen. And now, David saved that one Kohen from the house of Shaul, and now David's descendant is saved by a Kohen. And so it came around, it passed back to David's household, and it hung by this one thread of the house of David. Verse 11, Yamda Ratzim Ishva Kelev Yadim Kesabai. So the Kohanim are standing at Kesabai from left to right, and they're all standing around a kink. And so they bring him in. Verse 12. V'yotzeh ben hamelech. Now the crowds were there for the Shabbos, for the Shabbos services. And so he brought out I have a sermon for you today, guys. Guess what, right? So, and he brings out the son of the king. V'yiten olav. Now, in order that everybody know who he was, they took out the crown. They took out the crown. V'esa edus, and the testimony. Right there on the spot, now there was a special place in the Beis HaMikdash which was reserved for the kings of the house of David. And only, it was like the chair. It was like the chair that only the kings of the house of David could sit in that chair. And they take this, they bring out the Sevniah, and they anoint him the king, Vayimlichu Oso. And not only that, in case anybody had any doubts, you know, you bring a child out, they anointed him. Because you could only anoint a king, and even though normally you don't need to anoint a king, here they wanted to make sure that he would be accepted as the king, the Yaku Kaf, and it's very interesting also, it says they clapped. They gave him a hand. I thought that was a modern thing, you know, when you give it was like, why was that? Because the people didn't like this wicked Ataliyahu, just having somebody that would murder her grandchild, like, was so power hungry. So this was like, yay, David's still here, so they gave him a hand. And the Yomer, and they said the famous cheer that we have, the Yehi, long live the king. Yehi HaMelech, long live the king.
Where would the crown of David be?
Oh, so it could have been any crown, a certain crown. The question is, what does it mean, the testimony? So there's a very interesting tradition that when David... became king, there was some question about, there were people that questioned his lineage because he was from the house of Moab. So there had been a famous crown that had been, the prophet had made, and he said that the one who this crown would fit, it will prove that he's fit to be king. And the crown had like an indentation in it. And certain people have in their forehead like a flat forehead in the middle. And so it fit perfectly on David's head, and they said that's the, and only descendants from that family would the crown fit right. So they put the crown on the 7-year-old, and he had that indentation in his. It's almost like on the flat part of the head where the crown just sat just perfect. And that was the Aedis. That was a family trait of the House of David. They had this. We don't see it because people have hair, but sometimes a person is bald, you'll see like the you know, it's not always a flat; it's a rounded. Something exactly,
yeah,
but.
I've seen that.
But that was the some people say that was the testimony. They had other things that were in Vitumim, other ways of knowing that he was the real one. Verse 13. So everybody was happy. This sounded great. You know, you had everybody in shul clapping, and so you had this new, you know, young boy was the king. Verse 13. Tishma Atayahu es kol haratzim. Now Atayahu in her palace was close by, and she heard people running. She heard the Tavo Elaam Beis Hashem. She knew something was up, so she came to find out what was going on in the Beis Hamikdash. Verse 14. And boy, did she get a shock. And she thought she had wiped out all the kings, and she looks and she sees the king sitting there, Ala Amud, right there on the chair, Kamishpat, according to the rule. Not only that, Vahasarim Vahatrosos Elamelech, and the people are blowing the trumpets, the Kol Amaretz, and not only that, everybody was happy about it. And the people, they were thrilled. But Tokeya Vahatrosos, and they were blowing the trumpets. Asayahu, she knew this was the end for her. She knew that the real king, she stood no chance. So she did Kriya. She tore her clothing. She was so aware. Batikra, and she said, Kesher, Kesher. Kesher is we had this, it's funny, you know, here she sees the power, and then she complains when the power is seized back from her. She says, it's a plot. Verse 15, now, the people were all standing around, didn't know what to do, and V'yitzav Yoyada Kohen Esar Yameh, so he commanded the Yom Kudecha, and he said, V'yomar Aleim, he said, Hotzi Osa El Mibes L'Shederos. He said, well, we don't kill people in the Beit HaMikdash, so take her out, of the house, Ba'abach Reha, and if there are any soldiers that come with her, her honor guard, whoever, V'hameis B'cherev, Ki Omra Kohen Al Tumas Beis, but even at that moment, he was concerned about the house of Hashem, that there shouldn't be a murder taking place there. There's that, we always find, again, that there's a sensitivity to halacha, that sometimes things need to be done, like, you know, to kill a person, but even then, it has to be done correctly. It has to be done in the right place, in the right way. So even though it's very important to, she was, as long as she was alive, she might revolt, and she would be a threat to the new king. But still, we don't kill people in the Beis HaMikdash. Take her out of the Beis HaMikdash. That would be the proper way to do it. So, sure enough, 16, now, they had blocked off a lot of the entranceways, if you remember, to make sure that the soldiers and stuff didn't come running into the Beis HaMikdash. And so the only way that was open, they ended up taking her out the stable. They had a stable. I guess, you know, when people come to visit the Beis HaMikdash, they park their horses somewhere. But it's one of the problems of the old city is they don't have a good parking lot. Like, it's been a big, you know, like the people who live in the old city have to park like blocks and blocks away, and it's been an issue. There was an Atlanta family that lives there, the Millers, Lenny and Star Miller, if you know them. There was a big issue, like, where do you park? So they had if you came to the Beis HaMikdash and you had a horse, and that's, or you had donkeys, so you had a stable, a place where people parked their stables. So they took her out through the stable. And this was kind of an irony, the kind of a punishment to signify, like, she acted like an animal, and so she dies in the stable, so to speak, or in the stable entrance. Derek Mavai Susim Beis HaMelech Betumasham, and she died there, no longer the House of Achav. Sooner or later, every thread of that house had to be wiped out, and as long as they were alive, the whole world was in danger because of their wickedness. And again, the Jewish people doesn't like that kind of person who sees his power. And so now we have a new king, and we have a king that was raised by the Kohanim. That's very special, that a very, very holy way. Verse 17, Vayikras Yoyada Tabris Bein Hashem. And so what is the first thing he does is he says that, he makes a covenant between Hashem, Ubein HaMelech, and between the house of the king, Ubein Ha'am. We all got to be on the same page. It was a three-way, the king has to be on the side of the people, And he also has to be on the side of Hashem. And so he stresses this is the Jewish kingdom will stand based on that, the covenant between Hashem and between the house of the king and between the people. The Yos La'am La'Hashem, and the purpose is that the people be a nation of Hashem, based on Melech Ubeina'am. And the king is for the people. It's not for, so he really got off to a good start. 18 V'yavo kol am oretz beis habal. Now the people were so inspired and they just all agreed to serve Hashem. So naturally what they would want to do would be to wipe out the idols. And so we didn't even know earlier that there were idols in Yehuda. But apparently if you had the descendants of Achav running the kingdom, so then they set up idols. So V'yavo kol am oretz beis habal, they went into the house of the Baal. Now the people over here were enthusiastic, even the Amoritz, even this was a before we had that Yehu was the one that destroyed the Baal. The people on their own in the ten tribes had worshipped idols on and off for many years, and so on their own they couldn't bring themselves to wipe out the idols. But over here, even the people of the land, now that they had the proper king that would follow the Torah, they knew right away they had to destroy the Baal. So they went and they destroyed the Baal Batitsuas Mizbeka, and they knocked down the altars, Veslombov, and the statues. Shibru, they broke them, Hatev, and they broke them good. You know, that they wouldn't be put back together. in English they don't have that word Hatev. They just said that they broke the Abba. In Hebrew it says they broke them so that they couldn't be like reassembled. Ves Matan Kohen Habal Hogu. And it mentions they killed the prophet for the Baal. Now, unlike the ten tribes where there was a whole palace of them, you remember that they had to kill, here there was only one. Apparently he was Jewish, because it sounds like Matan sounds like a Jewish name. They had a one Kohen who, it doesn't mean he was a real Kohen. Kohen just means that he served the idol. So they killed him in front of the altar. V'yasem ekoin pekudas al beis Hashem. And They appointed people in charge of the house of Hashem. Vayikra Yisrael Emeus as Sakriv, as Aratzim, as Kol Ha'amoritz, Vayidu as Amelech Meis Hashem. Now, once they had gotten rid of Asayahu, and they had gotten rid of the idols, now they took the new king, and they brought him from the house of Hashem to the house of the king. V'yavu Derech Shar Aratzim, Beis Hamelech, and they brought him into the regular king's house. Yeshiv al kisei melachim, and he sat on the royal throne. In other words, the first time he had been in the king's chair in the Beis Hamikdash, like the king's seat in the synagogue, so to speak. Now they brought him into the formal, to the king's palace, and they inaugurated him. Verse 20, the Yisma kol ha'amoritz. And this was recognized, that this was a good thing, that all the people were happy. V'ir shekata, and finally we had sheket. Sheket is quiet. There was too much excitement, too much noise, too much. So the ear finally quieted down that this wicked queen was destroyed. They said, "So yo, Hamis Becherev, and she was killed with the sword, Beis Hamelech." So that was the end of this wicked lady, and history was saved by the other lady that the aunt who had saved that little child and risked her life to and the Kohanim in the Beis Hamikdash at very great risk to raise this child. And we'll just do a line or two. But Ben Sheva Shanim, and he started his kingdom at 7 years old. Ben Yosh B'Malka. Now, in many cases, the kings weren't always able to actually run the country. I think they call that a regent, or they have the. So here, his natural the Kohen who helped him was the one that Yehoyada was the one that ran the country or told him what to do. Bishnas Sheva Liyehu Malach. And this was during the seventh year of Yehu, where Yehu was king. Now Melech Yehoash, he was the king. Barboim Shana Melech, and he was king for 40 years. That's a long time. And Vishem Imo, and we want to know his mother. She was Sviya Miber Sheva. That was the name of his mother. Now let's just do one more line. Verse 3: V'yas Yoash Hayoshuve, and he was a good king. Call all the days Asher Horu Yehoyada. As long as he had his mentor around, he stayed on the right path. Now, after Yehoyada passed on, that was a different story. But as long as his mentor Yehoyada was around, Yehoash was a good king and righteous and pious and a very unique upbringing. After, you know, age 7, growing up in the Holy of Holies in the Beit Hamikdash.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.